Good afternoon and welcome to another episode of We the People Radio. Had a quick little transition from out in the lobby. We've got all these cameras and all this stuff. We're going to use Zoom today.
It's scary.
every time we try to do this, it turns out great.
You always catch Aaron doing something weird on camera.
No, that's so. Bill. That's
no,
Bill's
not,
job.
No.
Bill's always doing something weird.
Not me.
Okay, so today, the live show is December 12th, 2021. In case we play this again in the future, you'll have some frame of reference. Our guest is Professor Albert Stuart Rees. I'm not going to go into that till Bill does the sponsor. But you don't want to go anywhere because today's show is going to be super interesting.
Yes.
Hit it,
yes.
Bill.
Yeah, my name's Bill Cundiff, and our sponsor, I didn't catch your name. What was your name?
I'm going to wait and see if it turns out good or not.
Oh, okay. Our sponsor today is Pape Machinery, our local John Deere Ag and Turf dealer. They're located up on Twin View Boulevard, 3119 Twin View Boulevard in Shasta Lake City. And they'll fix you up with pretty much anything John Deere, steel, Honda. They got it all up there. Go up and see them or give them a call at 226-9226. Or you can catch them on the web at PapeMachinery.com. And they just completed their acquisition of Valley Truck and Tractor down in the Sacramento Valley.
Ta-da!
Added 9 more stores to the team. We're really excited about that. Another 818 employees. So we'll have you covered no matter where you are. If you can hear my voice, we got you covered.
Nice family-owned business.
Yep.
Actually run by the family.
The family, and they're very nice folks, nice people to work for, and we look forward to bringing on the extra folks.
Cool.
Yeah.
Okay. So, speeding forward into our topic, because we have a lot of ground to cover. So I'm going to tell you about Dr. Rees, and I have actually never spoken with him. Well, you'll find out why in a minute, because in addition to working with patients, Dr. Rees is also a professor of medicine at the University of Western Australia and the Edith Cowan University, which are both near Perth in Western Australia. It'll sound a lot more authentic when he says it, but, you know.
Yeah. gotta go
with my rotten American accent. For many years, Dr. Rees has published clinical and epidemiological research and reviews of basic science relevant to drug use and exploring the health implications of the known harms and risks of drug use and drug dependency. This body of work is ethically approved by various human research ethics research committees around the country. So he didn't just start doing this. He isn't shooting from the hip. He does this all the time, and he is the man on this topic. I've heard his name multiple times, so we're really excited to have him. His extensive research agenda continues to grow as new papers are being added to the list, and wait till you see the list. It's very long. I'm not going to read all that part, but I want you, because he's going to explain all this in non-science talk. We started reading this and it's like, oh boy, we're going to have to get the decoded version. But at present, he's using his advanced statistical techniques in R, whatever R is. I'm Orion, so maybe it's got something to do with my people.
I don't think to conduct
space-time analysis and look at the formal statistical pathways of causal interference, showing that relationships are not just associations, but actually causal in various large national USA data sets using advanced software. You will not be surprised that one of the topics is the risks associated with cannabis use, especially genotoxicity expressed clinically in birth defects and cancers, and neurotoxicity expressed clinically in autism and mental illness. So, you know, the drug that doesn't hurt anybody, that's all natural, blah, blah, blah. We do a lot to dispel that myth here. I think today is going to kind of, not to be too morbid, but put a nail in the coffin, if you don't mind me saying so. So, Dr. Rees, we won't interrupt you on any of the science unless we have no idea what you're talking about. So we've got about 10 minutes till our first break, so take it away.
Hi, Aaron. Thank you so much for having me on the show. Can you hear me loud and clear?
We can, actually. Dun, 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 dun.
That's great. Thank you so much for inviting me on your show. Look, there's really three main points I want to make about cannabis genotoxicity. The first is that it's not controversial. It's agreed, whilst cannabis obviously is controversial, cannabis genotoxicity is not controversial. It's agreed right across the board. It's registered in the FDA documents from the registered cannabinoids, and it's in the prescribing information for the
recording stopped
in America. So that's a very important point, that cannabis cannabinoid genotoxicity is agreed right across the board. The second big point is that it's an exponential effect. At the higher doses, at the micromolar doses in serum, you get an exponential dose response. Now, that's very important for nations or states moving into a legalization paradigm, because they're moving up into the higher zone, which is highly genotoxic. And the third big point is that this cannabinoid genotoxicity essentially relates to all cannabinoids. It's not just about delta-9 THC. It includes virtually all the cannabinoids we've studied. So that includes delta-8 THC, cannabidiol, cannabichromane, cannabinol, and cannabigerol.
So for those of us who Dr. Reese, for those of us who don't actually speak cannabis, what exactly, where would the regular person see those things? What are those things in real life?
That's a great question.
It's kind of a dumb question, but I mean, I don't know the difference between any of them.
Well, we all know what the cannabis plant is, cannabis sativa, and the cannabinoids are the unique cannabinoids, that chemicals that come out of the plant that have a particular structure, which is it's got four carbon rings connected together, which is based on a cannabinoid nucleus, which is called the olivetol nucleus. So they're all closely related. They're all structurally similar. They have different hydroxyl groups in different places, which is an OH group, different acid groups. But they're all unique cannabinoids, unique to the cannabis sativa plant, that are present in marijuana.
Okay.
All right.
So people might contact all of those things.
Oh yeah. That stuff's in cannabis that you get from the store or that you grow. The different cannabinoids. But the point is, because these days there's a lot of airplay given to cannabidiol, to delta-8 THC, but the one of the take-homes from this is that we're talking about all the cannabinoids, the genotoxicity seems to come from the cannabinoid nucleus, which is called olivetol. It's not related to the side chains or where the different double bonds are, which is the difference between delta-8 THC and delta-9 THC. In delta-8 and delta-9, the double bond on the C-ring is shifted just across one carbon, but it doesn't make much difference to the genotoxicity. That seems to be a class effect across all the cannabinoids. So I thought I thought before we talk about much more, it would be good to say what cannabinoid toxicity looks like clinically, how that's expressed. The genotoxicity, the key is to understand this is a toxic effect on the DNA, on the genes, which in a sense is the biological crown jewels. That's the information hub of all of our cells. And as you said in your introduction, the genetic toxicity clinically is expressed in three main features, which is cancer, birth defects, and aging.
Okay.
Now, we published just a few months ago in Scientific Reports, and we looked at five chromosomal defects, which are tracked over time. This is birth defects in the US. And we showed that all five of them were strongly linked with rising cannabis use across the US, and that effect persisted after multivariate control for ethnic and economic variables. And it actually fulfilled the criteria of causal inference. That is, it wasn't just an association, but there are statistical ways you can process this data which shows that was causally involved. In that same paper, we also looked at five cancers: thyroid cancer, liver cancer, breast cancer, acute myeloid leukemia, and pancreatic cancer. The big news about that: breast cancer is the commonest cancer of all human cancers in the US in recent years. And liver cancer is growing faster than one of the fastest growing cancers. And pancreatic cancer is the cancer with one of the fastest growing death rates. So we looked at those five cancers, and we found the same thing, that they all correlated closely with rising cannabis use, and the association was robust to multivariable adjustment. And in a causal inferential framework, the association appeared epidemiologically to be causal rather than just a mere association.
Hmm. Okay. Now, is this are these chemicals also found in CBD? That's a big thing we hear here in the States. It's sold pretty much in every drugstore now, and people are touting its effects. Is it also contained in the CBD oil?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
CBD is also genotoxic. CBD epidemiologically, CBD. Is associated with a bunch of about 12 cancers, but it's a different set of cancers to the other cannabinoids, but it's still tightly related to some cancers, including prostate cancer, which is the commonest cancer in males.
Interesting.
Wow, so much for that being a lot safer.
Yeah. So I want to talk about the cancer which is most strongly associated with cannabis use in the scientific literature is actually testicular cancer. Which is also the cancer that's associated with most years of life lost of any adult cancer. And whilst we're talking about testicular cancer, strangely, it's also relevant to females. Our recent analyses of the European data, the analogous tumor in females is called dysgerminoma of the ovary. And that tumor in females is also associated with cannabis use. That hasn't been shown before. But when I'm talking about testicular cancer, it probably has relationships to that germ cell tumor in the female. Now, testicular cancer has been found in four longitudinal studies to be linked with cannabis use, and the link was quoted by the director of the National Institutes of Drug Abuse in her recent paper looking at cannabis. And it's very interesting to think, because scientists have figured out how you make a testicular cancer, there's a number of steps involved, genotoxic steps, to give rise to the tumor. The first thing to know about testicular cancer and cannabis is the literature, the meta-analysis, says that the rate of testicular cancer is increased 2.6-fold after cannabis exposure. So there's a 2.6 jump from cannabis exposure. The other thing is that it cannabis reduces the incubation period of testicular cancer. The median age of testicular cancer in males in the US is about 33 years, and that means the biogenesis, it takes 33 years on average to produce the cancer. But after cannabis exposure, which probably happens at a median of 20 years of age, they get the tumor at 33, so that reduces the incubation period from 33 years to 13 years, which is a 2.5-fold acceleration. So if you multiply the 2.6-fold increase incidence by the 2.5-fold acceleration, you get a 6.5 increase in the rate incubation period index. The 6.5, that's massive. Now, To the biogenic steps to make a testis tumor, you have one or two doubling events of the genome. So the genome has to replicate an extra one or two times. Then you lose 50 to 70 chromosomal arms. The chromosomal arms are amputated. Up to 70 arms are lost after the genome has been doubled. You have to demethylate the DNA. Now, everyone knows what the DNA looks like. It's a spiral helix. We've all seen that. But it actually carries traffic lights on it, which turn the genes on and off, which in general terms is called the epigenetic code. And cannabis messes with the epigenetic code at many levels. So you have genome-wide demethylation, which cannabis perturbs. Chromosome number 12 is chopped in half and doubled. And you get an isochromosome 12, the short ends of the chromosome are doubled. And then you lose five chromosomes, chromosome 1, 11, 13, 18, and Y, and you gain five chromosomes, 7, 8, 12, 21, and X, right? So there's a massive genetic rearrangement, but the thing that blows me away is you double the whole genome, then you have to amputate up to 70 chromosomal arms to make a testis tumor, and cannabis is obviously doing that in testicular cancer 6.5 times faster than control.
And you're talking, I'm sure, we've got to take a quick break here, but when we come back, I really want to know what you think about this, because my guess is in the lab, you're talking about cannabis that's been grown without carbofuran and spray adhesive and all these other things that we're seeing in these these illegal grows. I mean, you add all those chemicals. I always figured that's what would give people cancer, but it sounds like they don't even need that to ramp it up. We're going to be right back. Our guest is Dr. Stuart Reese. He's coming to us from Australia via Zoom. The only reason I'm announcing that is because, you know, for the first time in the 11-year history of this show, this is all going just according to Hoyle, so I just want to keep that going.
Yeah, don't jinx it.
Now I'm trying the experimental music where I run it from here. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us. And the music is playing on my computer, but there we go.
Doctor, my eyes have seen the years and the slow parade of fears without crying. Now I want to understand. I have done all that I could to see the evil and the good without hiding. You must help me if you can. Doctor, my eyes, tell me what is wrong. Was I unwise to leave them open for so long? Call me strong, you call me weak, but still your secrets I will keep. Took for granted all the times I never let you down. You stumbled in and bumped your head. If not for me, then you'd be dead. I picked you up, put you back on solid ground. If I go crazy, then will you still call me Superman? If I'm alive and well, will you be there holding my hand?
That's what they're going to need is kryptonite, because they're all going to be glowing in the dark. So Dr. Reese, on this, I mean, when you add all, am I right? Your tests are all done on cannabis that's probably grown in a lab somewhere with no chemicals on it, right?
Yeah, dead right. You're on the money, Aaron.
So all this stuff that's being grown up, say, by us, and anybody who doubts that, actually, I'll put a link on today's page. You can find it at wethepeopleradio.us. And if you go there, there'll be a link. Actually, if you click on the pot page, you can see all the pictures of what goes on. But I'll put a link on there for a short documentary, 36 minutes, called Cartelville. And that was shot in Southern California about the illegal marijuana industry. And just in case anybody's curious, the reason we have so much of it in California is because we decriminalized the felony of illegal cartel grows. The illegal cannabis growing is not a felony. It's a misdemeanor. But the states around us are still felonies. So needless to say, we are the hot target audience. The second part of Cartelville will be about Northern California. So it'll be Shasta and Siskiyou counties. So you'll get to see that firsthand. And if you think the other one kind of blows your socks off, wait till you see the volume that's up here. But that includes a whole lot of chemicals that I've seen firsthand. And I can't imagine smoking or eating carbofuran, spray adhesive, and all the other stuff in between. What do you, I mean,
they don't put,
that ought to speed the cancer process up a lot.
They don't put spray adhesive on broccoli?
No, pretty much other crops don't have spray adhesive.
They don't have that.
No, they put it on the buds to attract pollen, believe it or not.
Wow.
What could go wrong? So Dr. Reese, when you add in all the chemical exposure, I know you can't actually quantify that just with me telling you over the, you know, little Zoom thing here, but what do you think? I mean, the cancer shows up much sooner.
Yes, ma'am, I agree. I haven't studied carbofuran, so I don't know about its carcinogenic potential, but it's obviously a highly toxic drug, and it kills a normal human. Just tiny doses can kill a normal human in seconds. So I don't know that actually people get to live very long after carbapenem exposure, so they may not live long enough. But look, if I could just add one comment that we didn't just get to make before. We talked about testicular cancer, and I read off a list of chromosomes that are involved. Now, I want you to remember this little fact. The human genome is 3,000 megabases long, right? So the total human genome is 3,000 megabases long. If you add up the list, the length of the chromosomes I mentioned a moment ago, you come to 1,254 megabases, which is 42% of the human genome is directly involved in known cannabis genotoxicity. I might say that again. 42% of the human genome is directly known to be involved in cannabis-induced genotoxicity. That is a massive result, which is not widely known. And that's without carbapenem.
So you add chemicals to that, and...
And you're off the Richter scale.
Wow.
If you live that long, which with carbapenem, you might not.
Right, right. So I think I know the answer, but I don't want to cheat. Why is this not being widely publicized? Because I'm assuming you didn't just figure this out yesterday.
Well, it has been, man. We published about it earlier in the year. You can read our paper. We have another paper coming out on the same thing. But listen, if I could just tell you something fascinating, which I did figure out just last week. I'm blown away that cannabis takes off 70 chromosomal arms 6 times faster than controls. And the question is how does it actually do that? And I was looking, working on slides. I have to give a talk for the International Association of the Science and Impact of Cannabis in 2 days' time. So those slides will be available. If you want to go over to the ISAC website, you can see the slides. There's 500-odd slides there. I'm going to skip through it in an hour. But I was preparing the slides for that talk, and I realized that in the published literature since 1969, there are photomicrographs of breaks on the end of chromosomes, fusions of the ends of chromosomes, and the formation of chromosomal bridges. And that's all in the published literature going back 50 years. Breaks, fusions, and bridges. What has never been described in cannabis before, in the lab, studied in cells that are actually growing and dividing, is there's a thing called a breakage, fusion, bridge cycle. So the chromosomes break at the ends. They fuse to other broken chromosomes. They form a bridge. And when the chromosomes separate during cell division in anaphase, the bridge is maintained. The bridge is broken by the forces of the mitotic spindle in anaphase. And the cycle goes around and around. This is called the breakage fusion bridge cycle, which was described in 1930. It's well known in cytogenetics. In other words, you set up a positive feedback cycle. One broken chromosome leads to another. What you have is effectively a lawnmower for chromosomes. And if cannabis causes that, which is well-documented literature, so that's how the cannabis cuts the 70 chromosome arms off 6.5 times quicker than the drop. It's absolutely amazing. It sets up a positive feed-forward cycle, and that's all the elements of that are published in the literature. I don't think the dots have been connected quite that way before, but that's how it does this amazing job at amputating all these chromosomal arms so quick.
I think the lawnmower for chromosomes, I don't think we can overstate that. That's something that should be made very public. Turn off your sound. I just can't even imagine what this is going to do in the future to our youth. Have you guys looked at this on animals? I'm assuming if this happens on people chromosomes, it completely happens on animals.
Yes, ma'am. That's correct. In animals, you've been a copy of the whole thing. All this birth defect stuff that we might get to talk about in due time is all seen in rabbits and rats and mice and guinea pigs, which guinea pigs and white rabbits are the best models for the human thing, and it's all seen and well-documented there.
Well, because people are using CBD on their dogs. I mean, not my idea. And so how's that going to turn out, you know, on people's dogs?
That's not going to be a pretty thing. Listen, can I just tell you something else of interest? There's another, the commonest childhood leukemia. I said breast cancer is the commonest adult cancer. The commonest childhood cancer is acute lymphoid leukemia. And that involves translocations commonly of chromosomes 4, 9, 10, 11, and 22. And if you add those five chromosomes together, you get 645 megabases, which is 20% of the human genome. The 20% of the human genome is clinically directly involved in ALL genesis, biogenesis, and we published about that in earlier in the year again. If you add the trisomies I've talked about, trisomy 13, 18, 21, Downs, Klinefelters together, with the two tumors that I've mentioned, you actually come up with 1,765 megabases of the 3,000 megabases of human genome, which is 59% of the human genome is directly involved in cannabinoid genotoxicity. I'll say it again, 59% of the human genome is directly involved in cannabinoid genotoxicity.
Wow, that's overwhelming.
I mean, the fact that we can legalize, that we can legalize it with a profile like that, that almost seems impossible.
Well, it's off the Richter scale. I mean, you guys are in the US. In Australia, this stuff's catching on as well. There's a group here called Little Green Pharma, which is our leading medical marijuana company. And, you know, I jumped on their homepage, their landing page recently. There was nothing about cannabis. It was all about cash.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely.
And that is what it's about.
In other words, these guys are just unashamed drug dealers. I mean, drug runners. I mean, this is not since 1957 has a known genotoxin been deliberately marketed for profit. This is what distillers was about. The thalidomide mess in 1957 didn't come to the US. You had a heroic doctor in the US worked for FDA, and the genotoxin segment of the thalidomide file was vacant, so she failed it. It didn't pass the test, but it was vacant deliberately because the company knew it was bad news for the same sort of reasons we're seeing now with cannabis. But not since 1957 has a known genotoxin been marketed just for profit, and that's exactly what's going down here. And this is documented known genotox from the literature. In all six places, we have looked at birth defects, right? Hawaii, Colorado, Canada, USA, Australia, and Europe, the signals for the genotox, for the genetic, the chromosomal disorders are very strong. In fact, in the US, as I mentioned a moment ago, all the chromosomal disorders which are tracked with cannabis. In Europe, they have Klinefelters as well and Beta-Turner syndrome data, and all the chromosomal syndromes, genetic defects, tracked with cannabis in all six jurisdictions we've looked at. So there's really no question. This is a huge issue. And you're talking about direct chromosomal genotoxicity.
Well, one thing I think we need to take into consideration here in the U.S. too is you can go into your local, what do they call them, pot shop or whatever.
Collective.
Yeah. You can go into your local collective and the gentleman behind the counter, who is an expert in cannabis can prescribe you the variety that will help you with sleep, with, aches and pains. And, you know, they'll prescribe you the exact, blend. And I think they're called herbatologists or something crazy, but I mean, these are people that have no formal cannabis education other than what they learned, you know, when they applied for the job. And it's just crazy to me that people can retail a product like this with no.
It's called medicine. They have actual doctors that will give somebody a prescription.
A prescription for it. Yeah, it's crazy to me.
Yes, sir. That is crazy. The other thing that worries us very much here in Australia, looking on from the outside, is this business of it entering the food chain. There have been press reports in France and Germany that babies are being born without limbs. And there are no such press reports issuing from Switzerland, which is interesting because in Switzerland, you're not allowed to have cannabis in the food chain. But it appears from what we can see that it is entering the food chain in parts in France and Germany. And in parts of France, the parts near Switzerland, remember Switzerland has zero, they reckon the rate of babies born without arms has gone up 60 times. And if you look at the first report from Hawaii, the number of the relative rate there of arms in cannabis exposed, I think it was about 18 times normal, but the confidence interval went up to 64 times.
What does that mean? More likely to happen?
That means, of the people who smoked cannabis when they were pregnant, they had 18 times more birth defects with no arms and legs than those who didn't smoke. But the confidence interval, the uncertainty interval, if you like, ranged from about 4 to 64 times. And in Aisne, in the northeast of France, it was reported that it was 60 times higher, which is in that confidence interval. That's what I'm saying. It was described in a way. And so this stuff is in the food chain. Almost certainly in France and Germany, and I suspect in parts of the US. Like, we know that in Mississippi and Kentucky, the rate of atrial septal defect has taken off like a moonshot and is 20 or 30 times higher than the rest of the country. And I know that in the US Farm Act, there was a lot of, $1 million nearly, I think, went to support the US farms after the tobacco class settlement. And a lot of the crops were changed from tobacco to cannabis. So the question is, are the cows idiots? Because what happened in France, the cows were born without legs and the kids were born without limbs. Right. So it was obviously in the food chain, got to the kids, and they got no arms and legs. So the question is this happening in parts of the U.S.? Is that why Mississippi and Kentucky, their atrial septal defect, the holes in the heart, rates have gone up, taken off, like literally gone vertical like a moonshot in recent years? Is it contaminating the food chain? Because if it is, cancer is relatively rare. Birth defects are relatively rare. But you're trashing your genome, and that is known to cause aging across whole populations. And you mentioned carbofuran getting in the water table. Cannabinoids, some of them are water soluble enough to get into the food chain, into the water table as well, which gets them into the food chain.
That's what I wonder.
You're now aging whole populations. We've got quite a lot of evidence of that. So we're very concerned, particularly in the context of an exponential dose response. As countries and states move into a legalization paradigm, they're legalizing unlimited smoking, consumption of unlimited amounts. You're moving up into the highly genotoxic range, and you hit a speed bump, and it takes off vertically. And this is what's really worrying us. Remember that CDC and our public health authorities are not tracking cancer and birth defects really in real time. Okay, the birth defects are 4 or 5 years behind, or even more, I think, behind current, and cancer is 3 or 4 years behind current. So what we're seeing is recent historical data, but we know about the exponential dose response. It's well described. The exponential dose response is seen in dozens of lab studies, and we are seeing it over and over and over again in epidemiological analysis in clinical populations.
Oh my God. Okay. Well.
Well, 5 years ago,
we are obviously mental. So
yeah, you didn't have the massive grows that you have.
No.
Today, particularly in California. I mean, you had sporadic illegal grows here and there that were caught and chopped down, and of course a lot of them got to market. But today, the illegal grows are massive.
We're destroying our rural areas, which is where our food comes from.
Yeah. So it doesn't surprise me that it's ending up in the food chain. Aside from the fact that you can buy it as an edible now in all kinds of forms.
Let's hit that when we come back too. We have to take a really quick break. We're going to be back with our guest, Dr. Stuart Reese. And you're listening to We the People. You can find more information at wethepeopleradio.us. Nice job, Bill.
Hey, thanks.
Crazy. They're not starting that again, are they?
Well, people say that I'm crazy. I'm a time bomb, that's a chicken. I even heard someone say they saw me acting like a chicken. I've been known to do impressions of a ducky or a cow. Well, I used to be crazy, but I'm a whole lot better now.
Yeah.
So, Dr. Reese, whose country is, how about ahead on usage? I mean, who's using all this? I mean, it feels like it's the United States, but that's just where we live. Is this just a worldwide phenomenon? Is anybody not into the marijuana thing?
Gosh, that's a good question. The question is, where would you get reliable data on that?
Oh, true.
I mean, I think probably cannabis use is rising around the world, but it's not rising uniformly. I would have to refer you to the World Drug Report from the UN Office of Drugs and Crime for data on that. You could get data on that. Some of the data from the third world, though, would not be reliable. I think the US is a particular focus, but the big concern is that wherever cannabis goes or it really takes off, civilization takes a nosedive. So parts of the North, India, Morocco, parts of Egypt, when cannabis really takes off, its intrinsic chemical properties are so severe that it will trash the region that it does. And it's been seen repeatedly wherever this stuff really takes off in a big way. So I don't think it's uniform worldwide. Certainly I agree that California is an epicenter and we know about the North. In fact, we recently, a year or two ago, we published, I think it was JAMA Surgery, and we said that the north of California is a particular focus of gastroschisis and autism, because north of California was a hot spot for autism and a hot spot for gastroschisis. Gastroschisis is one of those defects babies are born with where the guts are hanging out on the outside and they can twist, they can die, the liver can get involved. In 10% of cases, the babies die. But it struck us that both autism and gastroschisis had been known for the literature to be linked with cannabis. And it had been described that the north of California, these were hotspots, and we connected them together and said, oh my gosh, the California hotspot, it's showing up in this already.
So what about the places that are growing hemp? Because that's kind of a big, frankly, I think it's kind of like an excuse to grow pot. But okay, so let's just say they're really actually growing hemp. Does that have all these same properties, and is that contributing those things to the water table and the livestock and all the rest of it?
Yes, ma'am. That's what I said. This is a class effect across. This is not just about Delta 9 THC. Okay, it's not just about Delta 9, because that's what the hemp is about. Okay, it's low in Delta 9. But it's the other cannabinoids, the other chemicals, they all share that central cannabinoid nucleus. The olivetol nucleus. That is the genotoxic bit that was shown by Gabriel Nahas in 1999. And now, as I say, in lots of jurisdictions. And what Nahas observed in the lab in 1999, we have now confirmed epidemiologically in human populations.
Wow. How long have you been looking at this?
Well, I've been working pretty hard on it for the last, I don't know, 4 or 5 years. We've written a 4,000-page book which looks at the space-time epidemiology and the causal, from a causal inference, not just associations but causality. That's advanced statistics, as you said earlier, and it's taken me a long time to learn it and then to get the data and to pull it together and to get it published. Most of what I'm talking about is published or will be soon published in the next few weeks and days. We've got a big paper coming out about the US whole profile of birth defects in one of the big American medical journals in the next few days that's going to be released. And, you know, when it comes available, I'll flick it to you. You can put it on your page if you like.
Yes, please.
So in some of these areas you mentioned, like India, Egypt, you know, some of these countries that have high use, what type of societal changes are we seeing in those areas?
Look, thank you for asking that question, Bill. Look, that leads me into something else. So I just address another thing, and I'll come to your question on the way back. We talked a moment ago about aging and how entering the food chain is going to trash the DNA. It's going to have a negative health effect on everybody exposed. And so I wanted to talk about some of the evidence for that. And probably the leading feature of that is the toxic profile of cannabis itself. Now, we can probably summarize cannabis toxicity in the following groups. There's the acute toxicity occurs in the brain, which is the sedation and the sleepiness and the nausea, vomiting, hallucination. there's the mental illnesses with the brain which occur after long-term exposure, which is most mental illnesses. There's impaired driving which occurs. It aborts the normal lifetime trajectory. People form long-term stable relationships. They get jobs, they get houses, they move on, they have a career. It's got a gateway effect to other addictions that's known in the scientific literature. It's not controversial, it's known, it's accepted, it's established. It affects the respiratory system, the aerodigestive tract, and the bladder and kidneys. That's just general cannabis toxicity. That's not genotoxicity. That's general toxicity. If we look at this group of problems, it affects the reproductive tract in the male and female. These are all age-defining illnesses, the reproductive toxicity in the male and female. It affects the liver and causes liver scarring and liver cirrhosis, age-defining illness. It affects numerous cancers, at least 10 in the literature, and 3 of them in children. It affects congenital anomalies, as we've said. It affects the arterial system, cardiovascular, aging, heart attack and strokes. They're age-defining illnesses. It affects the immune system in an age-defining way. It affects, it causes a hormonal endocrinopathy. It whacks your hormones out of whack in an age-defining way. And it's got genotoxic effects on the DNA breaks, telomere loss, on the epigenome, the control system for the genes, and it causes errors of mitosis and meiosis, so cell division. All of that group of stuff is age-defining conditions. So that in alone is strong evidence that cannabis exposure causes aging. Now, in the communities that you're talking about, like North India and Morocco and parts of Egypt and the rest, where cannabis really takes, and you can see it today in the cannabis slums of Colorado, and I'll bet there's places in the north of California which extremely degenerate. What you see is the list I just read out of control, right? So you see the homeless in the park. They're full of poly addiction, poly drug use, cannabis leaf drug. They're full of mental illness. They're full of short lifespans. They're full of cardiovascular problems, chest problems. The whole thing is on display in its unvarnished glory. It's what you see, and I've seen the slides of the drug slums in Colorado, and they look the same as our drug slums here. And wherever this stuff goes and really takes hold and takes over a community, the whole community is trashed. And what you see is the toxic effect of cannabis in its unvarnished glory, which you know, excuse the phrase, but it ain't pretty.
No. And what about the people that will tell you that it's not a gateway drug the people that are living on the street and that kind of thing? That's not marijuana. That's opioid addiction. That's alcohol. We have like 5 minutes till the top of the hour, but I would really like to know your thoughts on, because that's always the pushback. Well, alcohol's legal and that's ruined so many lives, blah, blah, blah. They're the same. They always link them as the same.
Well, there's two comebacks to that. The first one is that in many places, certainly in this country, about 98% of our opioid addicts, they started with cigarettes, alcohol, or cannabis. Cannabis is a gateway drug. If you go to the scientific literature, there is no question. This is not controversial. This is established. This is accepted. Cannabis is a gateway drug. And I was recently interviewed on radio. They asked a similar question. And I said, every opiate death in this country can be laid at the feet of cannabis, because that's where it started. And that's where people's opiate addiction started. I mean, there are exceptions, of course. There's medical addiction, which starts from doctors, but that's only about 1 or 2% in this country. I gather it's more in the US, but every opiate death actually is a cannabinoid death, in that sense. The other big thing is when you look at the genotoxicity of cannabis and alcohol, tobacco, and you compare them side by side, cannabis and the cannabinoids are much, much worse. Often in many analyses, they're worse than alcohol and tobacco combined. So that cannabis is not just another drug that's bad for you. It's not just another social drug like alcohol and tobacco. This is actually a major genotoxin. And our argument is that the cannabis and the cannabinoids, all of them need to be regulated like every other major genotoxin in the country. And if you're talking about aging your whole population because it's got unauthorized entry into the food chain, which is happening without people's knowledge and without their consent, then this just doesn't make sense. And it's, in the long term, it's unsustainable. And where our simple argument is, if this is genotoxic and it's a major genotoxin, worse than alcohol and tobacco combined in many analyses, then it needs to be treated appropriately like every other major genotoxin and restricted and controlled for the safety and the well-being, not just of public health, but of the next. You're talking about four or five generations. When you talk about epigenotoxicity, we know it goes at least three or four generations and maybe more. The studies haven't gone long enough. You're talking about the next 100 years we're trying to protect here.
Wow. Wow, I never thought of that. Yeah, it would be a generational thing at that point. Interesting.
It just continues on and on. I'm assuming that there is a connection with, but you said even with low to no THC, this still has the genotoxic effect. But what about the really, really high THC content that we see now that, say, wasn't there 50 years ago? Does that just pour gas on the fire, or is it all just part and parcel the same thing?
Yeah, well, that's just taking you up into the genotoxic range, fine, where all these things just go vertical. They take off like a rocket. And the high THC, yeah, you're right. See, think about this. I said right at the beginning that cannabinoid genotoxicity is not controversial. It's not controversial because the industry agree with it and they openly talk about it. I was debating on radio with one of their leading advocates recently, and he said publicly, I don't recommend it in pregnancy.
He said he doesn't recommend it what?
Was,
say that again?
He doesn't recommend cannabis in pregnancy.
Oh.
Right? Right? And, well, the obvious comeback was, well, why not?
Right.
Because they know it's genotoxic, right? Well, if it's genotoxic for the pregnant, does that mean it's good for everyone who's not pregnant? Because the answer is no, because it's genotoxic, right? But we looked at this in Europe. See, Europe is the same as America. They've got more people smoking cannabis. They've got more people.
Uh-oh. We're having a little sound. We're having a little sound crisis there. We missed that whole chunk. Gosh, you know what? This is great. We're coming up on the 1 hour break. What a perfect time! Because he's frozen on the screen, so we need to unfreeze. We need to unfreeze Dr. Reese. We need to release him from his little prison. He's trapped. We will be back with you, though. And the great part is we've got 5 minutes of news for you. I'm sure it's all happy news because, you know, that's all we ever have. And we will be back with you. You are listening to We the People, and you can find us at wethepeopleradio.us.
Change, change, change.